and Bear Arisha. Last week, we talked about the negative consequences. Last couple of weeks, we talked about the negative consequences that Chazal describe for Ha'ever al Divrei Chachamim, for a person who goes against the words of the Chachamim. We really spoke about it, of course, more 2 weeks ago than last week. Last week, we expanded on it with a little bit of a Purim twist. The Maral next discusses a similarly surprising statement in the words of Chazal about the positive, about the rewards of following the words of the Chachamim, which of course we would expect that when it comes to rewards, just like we would have expected when it came to punishments, that the rewards would be far greater for words of God himself than the words of the Chachamim, than the words of the sages. However, we find in the Gemara in Erevin, which is the basic text which the first section that he brings here is going to be working for, quotes a verse in Shir HaShirim. The verse in Shir HaShirim says, Chadashim v'gam yishanim, dodi tzafanti loch. New ones, and also old ones, dodi, my beloved tzafanti loch, I have hidden away for you. So the Gemara says, Amra knesis Yisrael lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Jewish people say before God, Harbe gezeros gazarti al atzmi. There are many gezeros that I have decreed upon myself, Yoser mimasha gozarta alai, more than those that you made upon me. More than the 613 core commandments of the Torah, I have added extra decrees, extra prohibitions, the kiyamtim, and I've kept them. Adkan. In other words, chadoshim, new ones, gam yishanim, besides for the old ones. The old ones are the ones which we got at Har Sinai from HaKadosh Baruch. The new ones are the ones that the sages of later generations came up with, the ones that later generations developed. And the Jewish people are saying to their beloved, to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Chadashim gam yishanim doidi tzafanti loch. New ones, also old ones. Charles, could you do me a favor? There's a Gemara Erevin right behind you, on the small Gemara. Third one. So the tone of the Gemara, Chadashim Gam Yishanim, is that the big deal is the chadashim, you know, besides for the yishanim, besides for the old news, besides for the old things. But there's also the chadashim, the new ones. And in fact, the Gemara, in the section which the Maral here does not, he only quotes a snippet of it, but the Gemara in its fullest sense speaks even stronger and more clearly about about the strength of the chadashim versus the yishanim. Amra Knesset Yisrael Tnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ribono Shel Olam Harbe Gzeiros Gozarti Latzmi Yoser Masha Gozarta Alai VeKiyamtim. Many decrees I made upon myself, more than the ones that you made on me, and I've kept them. Amar Le'Rav Chisda Lumin Rabbanan Davikam Esadar Agadat Tokamei. The Gemara says Rav Chisda said to one of the sages who was being Mesadar Agadata, who was discussing Agadaic sources before him, tell me, what's this verse which refers to the new ones and the old ones? What is it? Omar Lei said to him, Eilu mitzvahs kalas, veilu mitzvahs kachamures. He says, there are the lighter mitzvahs and the heavier mitzvahs. So he said to him, what do you mean? V'chi taira pamim pamim nitna. Why would some be referred to as the old ones and the new ones? The Torah was given all at once, right? So if you speak about mitzvahs with heavier visible consequences or lighter visible consequences, fine, but they are all of the same age. So he says, rather, Elo halolu midivrei Torah v'halolu midivrei Sefer. It's referring to the Divrei Torah versus the Divrei Sefer, the words of the Torah which are old, which are from Sinai, and the words of the Sefer of the sages which are newer, which were, as Rashi says, shenischadshu b'chol dar v'dar, that were created in various generations, in each generation, ligdar geder usyog, to make those extra fences and those safeguards around the Torah. And the Gemara goes on to say the statements about b'ni hishar b'divrei seifrim yaser m'divrei Torah. Be more careful, in a certain sense, about the words of the scribes than the words of the Torah, because of the fact that anyone who goes against the words of the scribes is chay of misa, the source which we had before. However, again, chadoshim gam yishanim dodi tzafanti lach is more of a positive statement than the negative statements. And the expression as of chadoshim gam yishanim, new ones on top of the old ones, again seems to be implying some greater positive strength in the chadoshim, in the words of the scribes. Now, we could have just said that this is the flip side of what the Maharal said about the difference between Torah law and rabbinic law. Now remember, if you remember, that he said that rabbinic law is something that human beings can understand, can apprehend, and therefore it's something that we can see its consequences better. Whereas the Torah law that God had to create is necessarily of a different level, of a different world, and therefore it won't necessarily, its consequences won't be necessarily as visible in this world the way we have it. But the words that the sages themselves created, because they could understand it, they can understand the cause and effect, so of course its consequences will be more visible. That could be true in the negative sense, that could be true in the positive sense. But the Maharal understands this Gemara at this use of the verse in Shir HaShirim completely differently. And I'm going to read it to you. It's not a long piece, and then we're going to discuss it. Ubir inyan zeh. Ki knesses Yisrael misparim yoser b'gzeres shekozer al atzman, then gzeres d'rabbanan. The Jewish people, the tone is, look at these, all these new things that we've added, Rabbanu Shaman, that we've kept. The Jewish people seem to take a greater pride in the decrees that we've made upon ourselves and fulfilled. K'moishis bar davar zeh. V'davar zeh mayr al kedushas atzman, masha osim zeh b'li hechrach. Because this indicates a certain greater sanctity that the Jewish people have, that's the term which he uses, Kedusha, that they do this voluntarily. They were not forced to do this, they created these rules for themselves. Umore al ha'avoda me'ava. It indicates an avoda me'ava, a service of Hashem out of love. Shovin mi'irei no mosif al ha'avoda. A person who does it because he's afraid, because he's overwhelmed, because he has to, so he does what he has to do, and he doesn't look for extras. Achreshuena mechuyev v'davar, because he doesn't have an obligation to do so. Avol misha mosif al ha'avoda, but a person who does more, hu moral shovin me'ava. It shows that he's doing it out of love, and therefore he wants to do it heaping. He wants to do it with extras. And therefore we say, Chadoshim gam yishanim, again I'm reading it to you and then we'll discuss it, Chadoshim gam yishanim, doidi safanti loch. What's doidi? My beloved. The expression is, the new ones, also the old ones, my beloved. It's a term of ava, of love. Because that's what we're accenting. We're pointing out all the extras, all the new things, all the additional things that come from a creative, loving relationship. So therefore, it puts the chadoshim, which are the drabanan, before the yeshanim, because they show ava gemura. They show true love between Kol Yisrael and the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Now, the idea which he's saying here is that there's a passive and an active service of Hashem. There's a passive service of Hashem where we're just going to be makabel, where we do whatever it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts upon us. We don't have any need or any movement to do more, to create anything new, because we're just following directions. An eved, a servant who has a responsibility and who has no choice but to do that which he's expected to do, will, if he's a faithful servant, do everything that he's expected to do. But there's no reason for him, and there's no motivation for him to do anything more, anything different. If a person is looking to do new things, If a person is adding to the responsibilities that already exist, then that indicates an ava and a desire to do more. The Ramchal, or Moshe Chaim Lutzato, in the Mesilas Yesharim, he speaks about the notion of chassidus. Chassidus is, we're familiar with it now, the last couple hundred years, so our picture of chassidus has to do with something of a certain mode of dress, a certain, you know, followers of the Baal Shem Tov. But chassidus is, in its primary usage, is a person who serves God with chesed, with generous attitude towards the service of God, with ava, doing extra things, doing beyond the letter of the law. And the Mesilas Yesharim has a beautiful characterization of this. He says, the core of chassidus is Ashrei mi she'amaleh b'Torah v'oseh nachas ruach liyetzer. Fortunate is the person who tolls in Torah and gives nachas to his Creator. Gives nachas, right? What's nachas? How can you translate nachas? Right? There's no, no translation for nachas. The word translation for nachas is nachas. gives this kind of special pleasure to the Creator. So he says, look. The way you tell a loving relationship from a grudging relationship is as follows. I'll paraphrase, you know, contemporarily his example. You have your teenage daughter, and she's doing what she's supposed to do as a teenager. So mom says to the teenage daughter, she says, could you do me a favor, right after this big feast, this big meal, could you please clear off the table? Right? So she takes the dishes and, you know, with the chicken bones, with the, you know, leftovers people didn't eat, and she takes them off of the table and she puts them exactly as is into the kitchen sink. When the kitchen sink gets filled, she puts them onto the counter. When the counter gets filled, she puts them onto the stovetop. And when the stovetop gets filled, she puts them on your bed. Right? And, you know, as is. That's it. She doesn't really want to do it. Right now, for reasons beyond the scope of this discussion, she's not necessarily filled at this moment with overwhelming feelings of love and giving and generosity. She was asked to do it, and today she's saying yes, so she does. Then you have where things are really, really, you know, where the person is much more in a loving, helpful mode. And mom says, could you do me a favor, could you please clear off the table? So she says, you know, mom could use a hand. And if she wants me to clear off the table, she doesn't just literally mean, you know, Amelia Bedelia style that I should clear off the table, but she wants me to help her out in being able to get things going. So she takes the dishes and she scrapes them off into the garbage can, and then she'll put them in the sink, and if she can, she'll even wash them. Says the Mesilas Yesharim, the way of an ohev is, the way of somebody who cares for somebody is, that they don't just do what they're told. But a person who cares about somebody hears what they're told, and then they try and figure out from what they're told, from hints, from nuances, what the person would enjoy, would appreciate, and they do it on their own beyond that which they're told. They create their own additional things. A chassid serves Hashem generously. Just like it would be the same thing between a husband and wife, right? That, you know, the healthier and better and more beautiful situation, you know, of the anniversary present is not where the person, you know, says, you know, I've been asking you for 4 years to get me that thing. Maybe this year, my anniversary this year, would be a good time to do it. Okay, I'll do it. But rather, the person who's spending the 6 months before the anniversary trying to pick up hints, you know, what does the person look at, what do they admire, what this, and then, I got it, I figured out what would make the person happy, and now let me do it. That's ava. Says the Maharal, there's a way to view the words of the Chachamim, the creations of the Chachamim, is that they're doing exactly that. If we wanted to simply be passive and accept that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked us to do, we're avadim, we're servants of Hashem, we're responsible to be His servants, We have a lot of mitzvahs. Our hands are full. We're busy. And we do them. But the Chachamim took the Torah and they said, how can we do this better? Wes, Hashem only asked us to do this. But how perhaps can we assure the keeping of the Torah that it will be done very, very well? How can we perhaps come up with something that would enhance, that would build upon the same shlemus that the Torah wants, but indeed perhaps go beyond that which is set out and placed for us? That's an expression of Ava. And so when the Jewish people are speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they say, Dodi, my beloved, look what I've done. They point and they say, besides for the Yeshanim, besides for the things which you asked us, but how about these Chadashim? How about all these new things, these beautiful things that we added, and we went beyond in trying to do the mitzvahs? Because that's going to be the expression of love.
How do we blend that with the Maimon Chazal of Gadol Mitzvos?
Beautiful, excellent question. The Gemara says a very fascinating thing that plays right into this issue. The Gemara says that Rav Yosef was, Laelin Rachmanathan, was blind. So there was a debate in the Gemara. We rule that blind people are chayav in mitzvahs, that they're able to fulfill, the same way as people who are able to see. It's not like a person who's, heaven forbid, deaf mute, a cheresh, that's considered to be potter from mitzvahs, at least if he was like that all along, because of the inability to communicate would get in the way of developing his das, his mind properly. The blind person is considered chayv in mitzvahs. However, there was a debate. So Rav Yosef made the following comment. He said, originally, if somebody would have told me that a blind person is free from mitzvahs, I would have made a party. Why? Not because I wouldn't be doing the mitzvahs. Of course I would do the mitzvahs. But I would say, look, I'm not commanded to do them, and I'm doing them anyway. See that? I'm doing them voluntarily. That's a madrega. That's a special level. But he says, now that I heard that which we say, that the one who's commanded and does it is greater than the one who's not commanded and does it. So now, I say, anybody who tells me that a blind person is chayav in mitzvahs, then I'll make a party, because then indeed I'm obligated and it's a different story. So the Chazal say, the Gemara says, one who's commanded and does it is greater than one who does it when they're not commanded. How do we blend that with this idea that the Maral is saying over here, that the Chadashim, the new ones, the extra ones, are greater because we weren't commanded to do them, so they indicate a greater love? Baruch Atu Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyah B'Dvarei. How do we understand that din? That statement to begin with. That the one who does it when they're obligated is greater than the one who does it voluntarily. I mean, I think if we would have imagined, we would have sided with the sort of thinking that the Maral has over here, with the Hava Mina, with the original thinking of Rav Yosef, that if you do it voluntarily, it shows more than if you do it just because you have to, because you were told. So there's a famous comment of Tosfos there. Tosfos says that when it's something that you have to do, so then the Yetzer Hara says, don't do it. But if it's something that you don't have to do, he's not gonna challenge you as much. And therefore, there's a greater reward, there's a greater challenge, and there's a greater reward to do things that are expected of you. It's much easier sometimes to get somebody to volunteer to do something than to get people to do their basic obligations. Basic obligations, there's a drag factor. There's the, however you're going to characterize it, the HRF factor. I would present it perhaps with a little bit of a different expression in order to be able to understand that statement of Chazal. And to help us, I think, to understand why both of these statements can be true at the same time. There's another Gemara about this idea of mitzvah vaisa v'eina mitzvah vaisa, about one who's commanded and does, one who's not commanded and does. It's a very confusing Gemara when you just read it. The Gemara says like this: Roa v'yater goyim. The verse says he saw and he released the nations. What happened was that Hashem saw, after he created the world, after the generations developed, that the Bnei Noach, that the descendants of Noach, were not keeping the seven laws. other than the children of Avram, they were not keeping the seven Noahide laws, the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, right? You're familiar with those. the seven Noahide laws, you saw they weren't keeping them. So he released them. He released them from it. So the Gemara says, what? Because they're not doing it, so they're off the hook. Isgure isker, right? You know, you're gonna get them off the hook because they're not doing it. That doesn't make sense. So the Gemara says, no. What it means is that they won't get reward for doing it. Says the Gemara, but I can prove to you from another statement that they do get reward for doing it. Says the Gemara, they get reward, but they don't get reward like somebody who is commanded and does it. They get reward like somebody who wasn't commanded and doesn't. And that's how the Gemara finishes. So let me ask you a question. Does that make any sense? They were commanded. You just told me that you can't release them from the commandment. That doesn't make any sense. But you say, but the reward they're going to get is like somebody who's not commanded and doesn't, which is less than the one who's commanded and doesn't. What does that mean? If they're commanded, because we can't release them from the commandment, so why shouldn't they get the reward of somebody who's commanded? So the idea seems to be like this. You know, there's a notion in halacha of a non-Jew who accepts upon himself to keep the seven mitzvahs. The word for him is called a ger toshav. Not a ger who completely joins the Jewish people, but a ger toshav. A non-Jew who accepts to reside amongst the Jews, meaning to abide by the standards that would be expected of a non-Jew who resides amongst the Jews. What's the big deal about him accepting to keep the seven mitzvahs? Again, he's already obligated to keep the seven mitzvahs. But there are things that even if you're commanded to do them, you're not clued into the commandment. You don't consider it in any which way a responsibility of yours. And therefore, you can't be counted on to do it. And you can have something that you're going to expect that somebody needs to do, that you're going to expect somebody to do, and they have an obligation to do it. Not that you expect, that they're obligated to, they have a responsibility to do it. But you don't really expect them to do it. And therefore, you don't count on them at all that it's going to be done. Right? Chveis, you put up a sign and you say, everyone should please make sure that if you see paper on the floor, that you should pick it up and throw it in the garbage. Right? Whatever it is. Bend down and pick it up. Right? Signs, bend down and pick it up. And you know what? You're still going to hire a janitor at the end of the day to bend down or to use his broom and pick it all up. Why? I just told everybody else to bend down and pick it up. I told them, but I'm not counting on them. What happened was, as Hashem saw the world develop and he saw the nations of the world ignoring the seven commands of the Bnei Noach, they weren't keeping it. So Hashem said, I can't count on them. The only ones who were worrying about it were the Bnei Yisrael. So he said, them I'm going to count on. My future of the world, which is built on mitzvah, on the partnership of mitzvah, I'm going to count on them that they're going to be able to do it. They're going to view it as their responsibility. They are counted on. That's what it means when a non-Jew accepts upon himself the Sheva mitzvahs. He was obligated before, and he's obligated now. In that, there is no difference. However, when he's coming and he's stepping up to the plate and he's saying, I recognize that as a member of humanity, this is my responsibility, then Hashem already views him as a partner who's doing his job. And then his schar, his reward, is different. The reward of somebody who just, so to speak, almost incidentally is doing something, he's doing something aher, you know, that is not going to be is not going to be as significant as somebody who says, you know, I understand, I'm responsible, I'm committed, I'm a partner. You know that if you have somebody who does nice things for you, you might want to reward them. You might say, it's so nice, this guy, this stranger, he walked through the building, he doesn't belong here, he's not anything here, and he went and he picked up all the stuff that was on the floor. He was just here for a bar mitzvah, and he's going around, he's picking up the stuff on the floor, that's so nice. And if it was an employee type of a situation, you might even give him, you know, if it was, you know, not a guest, you know, you might even give him something, you know, for that which he did. But if he's here today and he's gone tomorrow, You'll give him something nice, you'll appreciate it, he did something nice, but the seriousness of how you're going to take rewarding him and dealing with him is going to be limited. But if you have somebody who's here and who's a part of it and who's going beyond the letter, you know, he's really taking his responsibility seriously and then some, so then you treat it completely differently because this person is your partner. Rav Yosef said, oh, I'm doing mitzvahs, it's great, I'm volunteering to do mitzvahs, it's such a nice thing, such a special thing. Yes, but if somebody that, but now I realize that if I'm not expected to do them, and I'm not a partner, I'm not of those that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's counting on, the partners whose mitzvahs keep the world going, then I'm really not part of the central cast here. And it's not as significant. It's not as significant. It may be nice, it may be a nicer expression, but it's not as significant. What we're talking about here is different than that. We're talking about the Jewish people accepting upon themselves mitzvahs derabbanan. In a certain sense, of course, our core obligations are more basic. And a person would never be able to say, oh, Rabbeinu Shloilem, look, I did all these extra things. Right? I kept Purim, right, which the Chachamim created, and I kept it with all of its, especially the ones which have to do with Johnny Walker and Jim Beam and all the other members of the Minyan, right? You know, so you know, I kept the Glenn Fittich, right? I kept all the laws of Purim very, very well. Pesach's a bit of a drag. I hope you don't mind. The Purim, you know, Chadashim, the new ones, the ones which we created, those I really kept well. What are you talking about? Of course, that's ridiculous. Basic obligations. You can't ignore your basic obligations. That's like a person who gives his wife an anniversary present but doesn't give her food. Right? Very, very beautiful. A beautiful diamond studded necklace that he gave her. But she has no food, she has no clothes, she has no nothing. Huh? Right? So it's not the...
Let's move on.
There are the basics before you get beyond. Right? But when you are a partner in the basics, right? And then you're able to show, and Rabbeinu Shalom, look, I'm not just doing Meir, I'm doing Me'ava, I'm adding, then you're indeed showing that you've enriched the relationship to a greater level, that you're doing something more. Chadashim gam yishanim
zayi v'fatzvati. Rabbi Weinberg spoke about the difference between the Torah and Shomer Mitzvahs.
Yeah. It's the difference, right? That we say here in the Shir, I don't remember. Rabbi Weinberg used to say this distinction between a Ben Torah and a Shomer Mitzvahs. He said that a Shomer Mitzvahs means a mitzvah observant person. Which means, says, this is what you want. This is what Hashem says what we have to do. So I do it. I do everything, and it's not a small thing, right? Person goes and observes everything which they're told to do. But then there's a term called a ben Torah, literally a son of Torah. And he said there, the person's not just simply satisfied to say, this is what I have to do, and so I will do it, but the person wants to be formed by Torah, and the person wants to see what is it. What are the Torah attitudes and infuse them into their life and not just satisfy themselves with saying I've done what I have to, but they want to indeed go beyond. And that's a much, much a fundamentally different level to strive for. If there's another half to this piece in the Maral, but before going on to that, I would just say, you know, in the context of indeed the Yom Tov of Purim, this is very, very much part of what of that which is there. In the Yom Tov of Purim, you're familiar that the Gemara says that when the Jewish people received the Torah at Har Sinai, so the mountain was, so to speak, held over their head. They had to; they were compelled. Whether physically the mountain was held over their head, or as Maral himself explains in other places, that the idea was that with all the events that led up to Har Sinai, with Yetzias Mitzrayim and the miracles and everything else, how could they say no? Right, they had to do it. And the Gemara says, Mikan Modor Rabba Liyaraisa, that to a certain degree they could always say, look, Rabbeinu Shalom, how can you take us to task to such a great deal? We had to. We were forced. Right? We would always have that sort of that exit. Until what happened in the days of Purim. In the days of Purim, the Jewish people were enforced, and they accepted it upon themselves. And the difference is Kabbalas HaTorah Meira, acceptance of the Torah out of fear, so to speak, as we have in our Sinai, or acceptance of Torah out of love, as we have in the story of Purim. Me'avas HaNes Shenasalem, as Rashi says, from the love of the miracle that was manifest, the miracle which was done to them. And what's Purim? What happens on Purim? Purim is the classical Chadoshim. Right, I'm forgetting right now the language of the Gemara. But the Gemara says this, right, that by Purim, right, what was the Kimu V'Kibul? It wasn't the mitzvahs that they were at our Sinai. Hashem told them, do this. And then what happened Purim? They said, let's also celebrate this day. They created for themselves a halacha. They weren't just receivers, but they were creators. They weren't just passive, but they were active. Right? A couple of you guys, we were around the table at the end of Purim, we were talking about this. It's a striking aspect of Purim. In fact, we pointed out that there's a very interesting thing in the halachas of Purim. Are you allowed to work on Purim? Are you not allowed to work on Purim? So the Gemara has a discussion. Because on the one hand, it says Purim is Mishta v'simcha, which is Mishta, feasting, simcha, joy, rejoicing, and Yom Tov. Yom Tov is usually a time when you're not supposed to work. But on the other hand, it says that they did it as days of Mishta v'simcha, feasting and joy, and celebrating. And it doesn't say Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, originally, the sages wanted to establish it as Yom Tov, that it should be forbidden to work. But the Jewish people said no. And they only accepted it as Mishta v'simcha, as feasting and celebration. Wow. That's a good one. Right? Since when do we have that? But the idea is that in the Yom Tov of Purim, the whole issue is Kiblu, what we accepted upon ourselves, that we're not just saying, okay, you said do it, so we're going to do it. We are initiating. That's Ava. Ava is when it's not because you're told, but because you initiated. And to a certain degree, that's how the Jewish people asserted this here in the Yom Tov of Purim. They may have been told, do it this way, but they said, no. This is the way we want to do it. And so they reformed it into something of their own. And that was Me'ava. Again, they were able to do so because the halacha hadn't taken hold. Right? This was the halacha in formation. But this was the influence that they chose to bring to bear here, because they wanted it to be not forced, but Ava, because that's everything that Purim was about. To do, to show Chadoshim, new, we're ready, we want to add, we want to create. It should be as much as possible the groundswell which shows our interest rather than obedience to that which is instructed. And that becomes a special quality of the words of the Chacham.
How do you reconcile that with Kolosh or Yerucha? I mean, there will be a time when the Chachamim will create certain halachas or certain zeiros and the like, and the Torah itself is already indicating to us that these chadashim will be part of the avodah.
Right. And that we are bound to listen to them.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. So I want to store that question. It's going to be the next thing that we're going to deal with.
They, out of love, wanted to...
Right. Nadav and Avihu is a classic example. Nadav and Avihu are, in a certain sense, again, beyond the scope of our discussion to talk about it at length, but Nadav and Avihu are Purimdik. Shesuye yayin nichnesu lehechol. They entered the hechol, the way the sages characterize it as, intoxicated. They went out of love, because of the ecstasy of the moment, the fire had descended from the heaven, the Mishkan was dedicated, and they went and they decided to bring their own ketores. But the idea was that they did it without the limitations being respected. They did it without the bedrock of Yira, of respect for responsibilities. There were limits to what a person was allowed to do when it came to offerings to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it wasn't so simple, right? There are areas where you're able to innovate, where you have that room, and there are areas where when you're going to innovate, you're going to be trespassing onto other lines. And that was an issue there. It's a significant thing that Nadav and Avihu is contrasted to Yom Kippur, right? The beginning of Parshas Acharemos, which teaches us about Yom Kippur, it says, tell Aaron, they should not go whenever they want into the holies, right? They should not go. He said this again, after the death of the two sons of Aaron, they should not go in and die, unless they die. But rather, you know how they should come in? They should come in as follows. And it gives the whole order of Yom Kippur. None of an Aviyu came in, not only that it was, they weren't fasting, but they were indulging. It was Yom Kippur. It was Purim, right? In a sense. It wasn't literally Purim, but they were Shesuya Yaya Nichnesu. They were intoxicated. We say, be careful when you come into the Mikdash to do Avoda, you should come in instead, by contrast, as in the case of Yom Kippur. Right? Yom Kippurim, right? We have this this inverse relationship between the two of them. Yira is a place, has a place. Ava and its boundaries is something that has to be played with. This is not a simple thing to just, you know, Ava without boundaries, as we know, a very, very tricky issue.
If they were intoxicated, they don't know right from wrong.
Right. They can't respect boundaries. That's correct.
They innovated on their own. They didn't ask the God of
right. Right. They showed no deference in something with consequences. Okay. And the Maral goes on, and I'm gonna skip this night. We could do every piece, but and every piece is rich, but it's simply too challenging in terms of moving on. The Maral goes on and he brings Gemara and Yevamos. The Gemara and Yevamos says, the Gemara speaks, Yevamos is about marriage and relationship related issues, the levirate marriage, and the first issue in Yevamos is where there's a, so to speak, responsibility for levirate marriage. A person dies without children and Le'olenu, and his brother is supposed to assume the marriage. So the first Mishnah in Yevamos speaks about cases where a person dies without children and his brother has a mitzvah to assume the marriage, but the person who the deceased brother was married to is someone who can't necessarily marry the surviving brother. For one reason or another, she was permitted to the first one and she's forbidden to the second one. She's related to the second one but not the first one, however it is, right? Let's say, whatever. Mishnah gives 15 examples to start with, and then it goes on with others, and the Mishnah speaks then about Isur Kedusha. Those who would be forbidden because of an Isur Kedusha, a prohibition of sanctity. So the Gemara says, what's a prohibition of sanctity? Right? I know some people consider sanctity forbidden, but generally, right? What does it mean, an Isur Kedusha? So the Gemara says that it's a rabbinic prohibition. That's the terminology which is used for rabbinic prohibition. It's called a sanctity prohibition. And Abaye said, "Kol ha-mekayim divrei chachamim nikra kadosh." A person who upholds the words of the sages is called a kadosh. Is called holy. Says to him Rava, "Umishein ha-mekayim divrei rabbanan kadoshu le-mikri harasha le-mikri." He says, if the sages said you have to do something, as Rabbi Schechter quoted before, the pasuk says, you've got to listen. So how can we say, oh, if you fulfill the words of the sages, you are called a saint. You are called sacred. Which makes it sound that if you don't, so you're not called sacred. But you're still righteous. You're still, you know, in good shape. A person who goes against the legislation of the sages, I mean, the bottom line is, it's forbidden. Right? We can't say it's only a mitzvah d'rabbanan. We have to keep the Torah commandments. We have to keep the rabbinic commandments. What does that mean that he's called a kadosh? Ela my Rava, rather Rava says, Kadesh atzmecha b'mutar lach. Sanctify yourself by separating yourself from that which was really originally permitted to you. Another one of those Gemaras where you don't understand exactly the flow from the question and answer. So still, why is it called an Isser Kedusha? Why is it called sanctity? Makes it sound like only the sacred, the sanctified, abstain from it. In the end, it's obligated on everybody. So here the Maral makes a difference, makes a distinction, which is very, very important, which comes to what Rabbi Schechter was pointing out. Once the sages legislated, so of course, for me, for you, for the individual consumer, for the individual responsible, It's an obligation, it's a responsibility like anything else. We have to keep it. If we don't keep it, we're avoiding our responsibility. And, you know, the Maisa, practically speaking, what's the difference whether Hashem said it or whether the sages said it, and Hashem told us we have to listen to the sages. Practically speaking, it's almost the same thing. However, which is therefore why we want to say, why the Gemara recoils at saying, oh, this is an Isser Kedusha, this is a mitzvah which is kept by the saintly. It's not a mitzvah which is kept by the saintly, it's kept by everybody because you have to keep it once the sages legislate it. But the national perspective on this mitzvah, when we think about how the Chachamim of the Jewish people created this, it was in a framework of Kadesh Atzmecha B'Mutar Lach. It was in the framework of sanctifying ourselves in things which Hashem said are okay. In other words, we present this because of the fact that it wasn't simply just something that we were told to do, but something that we as the Jewish people accepted to do through our representatives, the Chachamim, who are the ones who put such acceptance into place. We did it as a Kedusha. If it's generated from us, it's not Yira, it's not simply deference to the divine command, but it's an indication of our own Kedusha, our own sanctity, and our own desire to fill out our obligations and our connections to Hashem Yisbarach. So the way he says it is that that's the Gemara's shift from its original proposal to its refined proposal. It's in its original proposal, it made it sound like when I, the individual, do it, so now I'm a great sacred person. He says, what do you mean? By the time it comes down to me, I'm already responsible to do it like anything else. Yes. But the mitzvah retains in the national framework. When the Mishnah wants to refer to this, what kind of an Isser it is? This is an Isser Kedusha. This Isser, this prohibition, the fact that you can't marry this person is indicative of the Kedusha of the Jewish people, that they've chosen to build on their relationship with Hashem, to build on the Torah which they were given, to make it fuller and to make it even more profound of an impact on them. That's why it gets this title. So, yes, in a sense, when we do a mitzvah d'rabbanan as an individual and we don't necessarily think or appreciate its context, so we can say it's just like anything else. The same way I can't eat, you know, a piece of beef cooked in milk. So I can't eat a chicken sandwich and then a glass of milk an hour later. Same thing. This one I can't do, that one I can't do. But when the Jewish people stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they say, Rabbeinu Shlalom, you see what's going on over here? You forbade us to not eat meat of an animal cooked together with milk. But you know that what we as a Jewish people have adopted? We've adopted to expand the definition of meat, to expand the definition of what it means meat and milk together. Right? Because we want to preserve your Torah. And that is indicative of the Kedusha, of the sanctity of the Jewish people. We may not experience it individually that way when we do it. The only way we might experience an addition like that would be something which even the sages didn't legislate. But you say as you do it that you found something that you feel to add, to enhance, that you voluntarily choose to do, then you will taste it as an individual. But when we as a nation stand and we look at the words of the sages, when we stand to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we say, Ribbono Shel Olam, our beloved, do you see how we as a nation have acted like we love you? That we've built upon what you already demanded of us and we've gone further? That includes the entire corpus of the words of the Rabbana, of the words of the Chacham.
How are you going to differentiate between what you're saying and associa glatara, that you're making additional things but just to protect the main commandment?
Because that is an expression of siyag l'tara. An expression of siyag l'tara is that, you know, you're not trying to just get away with it, but you're viewing it as something precious that you don't even want to touch. In a conventional view, you can view siyag l'tara as fearful, fearful, and more fearful, right? In other words, I'm so scared about going against the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I'm going to put this extra fence around it. And it's just more and more yira. But on the other hand, it shows a certain proactive desire to fulfill Hashem's will and to be so careful about fulfilling Hashem's will that we are going about and building those fences. We're not coming to the Torah grudgingly. We're coming to the Torah actively. We're coming to it creatively. Let alone if the fences are to be seen, as the Maharal alludes to in a couple of places, as an expansion in a certain sense of the principle that the Torah is saying. The Torah is giving you the baseline, and this would be in a certain sense not just the protection of the Torah, but also, you know, catching the Torah where it has a trace. I took out these because these things, we don't have time to do it inside, but I want to reference it. The Ramban, the two Rambans, one Ramban which is in Parshas Yisro by Zohar es Yom HaShabbos Lekacho, by the Shabbos commandment. You know that in the first version in Parshas Yisro, when the Torah is describing it, so to speak, as it's happening, it says Zohar es Yom HaShabbos, commemorate the Shabbos. How do you fulfill the mitzvah of commemorating the Shabbos? You make Kiddush, you have feasts, you dress up for Shabbos, and so on and so forth. In the second version, which is in Deuteronomy, in Vayeschanan, when Moshe is repeating the Torah, so there it says Shomer es Yom HaShabbos Lekacho, guard the Torah, guard the Shabbos, preserve the Shabbos, which we understand usually as referring to don't do this, don't do that, don't do the 39 categories of work, all the different things that are forbidden. So the Ramban has a piece there, a very, very important piece, where he says that you have positive commandments and you have negative commandments. Negative commandments, prohibitions, tell you not to do something. Those are commandments in the family of yira, of fear of Hashem. Don't do it. You're restraining yourself. I'm limiting myself to what he's told me. Positive commandments, says the Ramban, are ava. They're love. They're you're doing something. You don't do because you don't want to step on somebody's toes. You do because you want to connect. Now there, of course, he's speaking within the mitzvahs that we are commanded to do. Because we understand even within them, there is a duality. The joy of Shabbos, the sense of connection of Shabbos, is going to be established more when you're sitting around the table and you make Kiddush and you have a Suda and you have the words of Torah and you have whatever, the connection to family, the positive expression of rest. Right? If you sit on Shabbos like this and you don't do any work at all, right? So you may appreciate, or you take a sleeping pill and you just go to sleep for the whole Shabbos. Right? So then you may have managed to not stay over, you know, step over any lines. But on the other hand, you haven't experienced the positive expression of Shabbos, the Ava expression of Shabbos. You've experienced the restraint. And that's, in a certain sense, more broadly, what the Maharal is saying over here. When we have the things which Hashem told us not to do and to do, to a certain degree, we can also do those. You know, Shabbos, once you get used to it, tefillin. Tefillin is the ultimate expression, the yirastich l'olam, of the bond of love that exists between Hashem and the Jewish people. And I won't speak for you, but when I put on my tone this morning, I didn't think that. In fact, I was hardly thinking anything. I just went like this. Right? Once I'm commanded to do it, it doesn't necessarily become an expression of love. I have to think, I have to get myself into it in order to be able to experience it that way. So you understand that when you develop, when you're proactive, that's the ultimate ava of active. And there's another comment of the Ramban. And this is one of the most famous comments of the Ramban in his commentary on the Torah, from the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim. And the Ramban says the Torah gives us a mitzvah, be holy. Kedoshim to you, because I, Hashem, am holy. So the Ramban says, what is this mitzvah? Rashi has an interpretation. And the Ramban says as follows, right? Talk about what Rashi Rabbi Weinberg used to say about Shomer Torah versus Ben Torah. Ramban coins a phrase of Naval Birshus HaTorah. A person can fulfill all of the mitzvahs, all of the negative prohibitions, and all of the positive, virtually all of the positive commandments, and still be referred to as a Naval. A Naval is, again, a word which is hard to translate, but basically as a vile, corrupt person. Says the Ramban, a person can make sure that they eat glatt kosher. But they eat glatt kosher for their entire waking period of their day. They get up in the morning, they wash, They make a hamaitzi, and they make sure not to have any significant interruption. They bench before they go to sleep. Right? And everything they eat is glatt kosher. So they haven't transgressed anything. Right? They've kept kosher. But on the other hand, is that what Hashem wants? Hashem drew the outline in the mitzvahs. Says the Ramban, comes the mitzvah of Kedoshim to you, and it says, sanctify yourself. We're not going to put this, we're not going to tell you how to do it, because then again, you're just going to experience it as a routine. A person could fulfill all the mitzvahs of the Torah and still be corrupt. Unfortunately, we know that can be the case. Oftentimes, the corruption that we see is a person who's even keeping part of the mitzvahs of the Torah that he's choosing to emphasize and not keeping all the mitzvahs of the Torah. We would see far less corruption if people would just, you know, of quote-unquote religious people, if they would be keeping all of the actual commandments. But even if we're keeping all the actual commandments, it doesn't mean necessarily that we're going to be sacred. Says Ramban, there the Torah gives us the mitzvah of Kedusha. Well, you don't want to just go by the rules, but you want to make yourself sacred like God is sacred. You want to attach. You want to create a strong bond, a meaningful connection. That's a whole different story. That's the mitzvah, which this phrase is Kadosh Atzmecha, that's Isser Kedusha. That's what we're talking about over here. We're trying to create something stronger, something bigger. The Chachamim helped us to ratchet things up, to move things in that direction. Part of their work, as Ramban defines, those of you who have to have a chance to study those two Rambans, they're important in this way. The sages sometimes attempted to help define for us what Kedusha would do beyond, you know, the baseline of what the Torah says. But in any sense, that becomes part of the creative responsibility of mankind. When the sages did it, it was binding upon all of us. But there's room as well still for the individual with their creative participation to introduce that level of Kedusha, of Chadoshim, of the new, that shows the Ava, the engagement of love in the service of Hashem. And that's what makes the words of the sages and our initiative have a special quality. Not in the absence of the basic responsibility, not without the Yira, built on the fact that we're committed and we can be counted on for the basics. But on top of the basics, we're not satisfied with the basics. That's the element. Okay. Good morning.
I have a secret to tell you all. How was I supposed to hear this? We're blessed here with a great rabbi.
I thought it was going to be a surprise for us.
If I embarrass him.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Have a great day.